You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Last week, if you wanted to rent a car but didn't want to do business with a car rental company that was in bed with the National Rifle Association, furiously filleting the National Rifle Association, you didn't have many options. Hertz, Avis, Budget, Alamo, True Car Enterprise, all corporate partners of the National Rifle Association. What a difference a week makes. You know, actually I was about to say, what a difference a week and a pile of dead students make. But we've seen piles of dead students before and stepped right over them. We've had 8 school shootings in the United States since the first of this year, scores of school shootings since the massacre at Columbine High School, and we've seen school shootings with much higher body counts. Sandy Hook, where 26 were killed and 2 were injured. Virginia Tech, where 32 were killed and 23 were injured. And nothing changed. We stepped right over the bodies of those students, just as we stepped over the bodies of country music fans in Las Vegas and nightclub patrons in Orlando and movie fans in Colorado. But this time, it's different. Maybe it's the moral clarity and passion of the students at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, these theater kids and debate club members, and Emma Gonzalez, the president of the school's Gay Straight Alliance, who now has twice as many followers on Twitter as the NRA. Those kids, these kids, these amazing kids, they don't seem to suffer from the learned helplessness that prompted the rest of us to shrug off massacres because the NRA was just too powerful. Or maybe in addition, we've reached the tipping point. Maybe the pile of dead bodies has finally grown too large to ignore. Whichever one it is, I am glad I am alive to see it. If we'd acted sooner, maybe all the students at Stoneman Douglas High School would be alive to see it, and all the queer black and brown people at Pulse Nightclub in Orlando and all the country western music fans in Las Vegas would all be alive to see it. I'm going to toss out a Mahatma Gandhi quote right here because it's pretty relevant. Remember that all through history there have been tyrants and murderers, and for a time they seem invincible, but in the end they always fall. Always. I am so confident. I am so hopeful. I am so optimistic at this moment that we are watching the fall of a great tyranny, the fall of the National Fucking Rifle Association. But it's not going to fall. These murderers, these tyrants, not going to fall if we don't keep the momentum going. Go to marchforourlives.com and help plan or help fund the gun control marches that will be taking place in Washington, D.C. and all over the country on March 24th. The march was called for by the students at Stoneman Douglas High School. Support it. Also, go to everytown.org, the organization founded after Sandy Hook, and find out how you can help vote out the NRA's bought and paid for politicians in D.C. The NRA claims to have 5 million members. Become a dues-paying member of Everytown, like I just did, to counter the NRA's claims and fight the NRA's paranoid, racist, xenophobic, murderous, tyrannical, anti-American agenda. The students at Stoneman Douglas have accomplished so much just in the last week. Let's all follow their lead. Let's hear their call. Let's get out there. Let's fucking do this. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, the free edition, lots of your Q's, tons of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. The show is twice as long, no ads. Robbie Suave from Reason.com is here to talk about what you should do if your kid gets mixed up in a sexting scandal at your kid's middle school or high school. That's on the Magnum. Here we go. This episode is brought to you by Movement Watches. Good-looking watches, bracelets, sunglasses, and gifts at great prices. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/savage. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store with over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off retail price. It's the style secret over a million women use to refresh their closets. Get an extra 30% off your first order. Go to thredup.com/savage. That's thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Today's episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. And right now you can enjoy the stamp service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code, SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic, enter SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a mid-20s, single, cis, hetero female living in a major city on the East Coast, and I wanted to get your opinion on something in my dating life that I've been going back and forth on for a while now. To give you some background to my question, I'll start by saying that I'm a virgin. Not by conscious choice in the sense that I'm saving myself for marriage or avoiding sex for religious reasons. I consider myself sex positive and would like to have a sexual partner, but it just hasn't happened for me yet. I've been going back and forth on whether I should tell guys I go out on a few dates with this fact about myself. I feel that casual sex is almost an expectation at my age, so when I get to the second or third date with a guy, I'm usually feeling that pressure. I don't want my first sexual experience to be a casual one, mostly because I find myself more turned on by emotional connections than physical ones. I don't want my dates to wonder why I'm turning down sex so early on, because that might seem like more of a rejection of them than a rejection of sex at that point in time. I've shared this with a few guys, and things either seem to fizzle out or I start feeling the pressure more and more with each date, like there is an expectation that we'll get there soon since we keep putting it off. It has also contributed to my overall anxiety on my dates when anything physical is happening. It's always in the back of my mind. To give just a little more context, I haven't had oral or PIV sex, but I have fooled around with some guys and I also masturbate, so I feel like I'm not a virgin in the purest sense of the word. So what do you think, Dan? Should I tell the guys that I'm dating about my lack of experience, or should I keep that one to myself?
So, you're not a virgin in the pure sense of the word, which implies that there's an impure sense of virginity, and we should just get away from the whole idea that virginity is purity and purity is virginity, because it places a value on virginity that is unearned and shames people who are sexually active. It says that people who are not virgins are impure or tainted somehow. And the taint can come into play when you lose your virginity, but people who are post-virginity are not tainted. And it's important to remember, and I think you get this, but I'm going to put a button on it and articulate it, that you don't have just one V card. You have a deck of V cards. You say that you masturbate. You say that you've done a little rolling around and messing around with guys. So you describe that as not a pure virgin. And I would describe that as you've tossed off a couple of cards from your V deck. Haven't tossed off the oral card or the PIV card or the PIB card, but you're not playing with a full deck anymore, which actually doesn't sound right either, so strike playing with a full deck anymore. But you're in it. You are, to some limited extent, sexually active. All right, so what do? You do what you're doing. You tell the guys that you're dating that you are a virgin. You tell the guys that you require an emotional connection to someone before you feel comfortable being intimate with them. And intimacy is a spectrum. It goes from the rolling around on the couch that you've already done to the full penetrative PIV sex that is now so fraught because you've been holding it back so long and you've invested it with such meaning and importance that I don't know if you're ever going to lose your virginity, at least not in your 20s. At this rate, are you going to lose your virginity? Because you're waiting for the perfect person to come along that you can gift your virginity to. And I think you want to date that person long enough to have an assurance that the relationship could never go wrong, because if the relationship goes wrong or if you have sex once or twice and it doesn't work out, you're going to feel like you threw your virginity away or you wasted it on the wrong guy. And there are no guarantees. You will not know when you lose your virginity whether this is the guy you're going to be with for the rest of your life. So you need to shift your thinking. I've been hammering away at this point a lot lately. Maybe I'm going to sound like a broken record, but instead of thinking long-term relationship, but I can only lose my virginity in the context of a loving long-term relationship for me to feel good about having lost my virginity, you need to start thinking about losing your virginity possibly in a loving short-term relationship, because there are no guarantees. So instead of telling yourself, I can't do this with someone unless he's the person I'm going to be with for the rest of my life, tell yourself, I'm going to find someone that I can do this with who might be the person I'm going to be with for the rest of my life, but who'll be a good person to do this with regardless, who'll be considerate and loving, even if it's not forever. He'll be compassionate and kind and careful and go slow, and he'll care about me in this moment and the moments before, for many moments after, but we don't know how long after. And then if the relationship goes south, don't redefine that experience as negative because, oh, you wasted your virginity on this guy and you only dated for another couple of months after that. If they were a good couple of months and a good experience when you lost your virginity, you should view it as a good and successful short-term relationship. You need to take the pressure off yourself. You've attached a great deal of importance to the loss of your virginity. And you know what? It is important. Every card in that V deck is important as you lose them. It's emotionally and sexually significant. But you don't want to grip that deck so tightly in your hand that you become fearful of losing even a single card to someone who might not be there forever. And unfortunately, we define there forever. We define the open-ended long-term relationship as the only successful kind of relationship. And you want to lose your virginity in the context of a successful relationship, which the culture and perhaps you yourself or your the way you were raised psyched you up to believe that that only is a relationship where death did part those two motherfuckers. If both of you get out of the relationship alive, it was a failure. And with those kind of stakes, it's not surprising that you're gripping your V-deck so tightly in your hands. Change your definition of a successful relationship, and it's going to change the stakes, and you'll feel more relaxed. If you're with a guy you feel good about, and you feel like he's a possibility, and there's intimacy and a connection there, you can relax. You can lose your virginity safely. Use condoms. Be responsible. Be on birth control. Talk about it. Be sure that he knows you're a virgin. And then let it go. And then make the best of that relationship. And it could be a relationship that lasts the rest of your life. But ask your friends. Very few of us are with the people that we lost our virginities to. Often for a reason. Because our judgment around who we want to be with and what we want sexually isn't always the best until we've had some experience. And we've had some different partners come along. Not everyone picks right out of the gate. Ask any Duggar girl.
Hey, Dan and the Youth. I'm a cis male out of Buffalo. I've been seeing this girl for a while. We met on Craigslist, but, you know, besides that, she's a total peach of a gal. I am crazy about her. She's crazy about me. Because of some bureaucracy snafu in her school, you know, basic university stuff, she's been sliding by on it, just living, but now they've caught her. And she might have to go back to the Big Apple, or who knows. But, yeah, she might have to go back to the Big Apple. You know, she has fallbacks and things like that. But we're talking about a back-and-forth thing. And I'm a 23-year-old dude. I have no money because of addictions that I have had and am rising above. I want to see her some more, but who knows how that goes. I mean, she's a low-key chick, and I don't think that even without me that she would be going around with other guys. But should I follow her? Should I not? It's not that I have nothing else. It's that I just like what I have, and I would like to keep. I like her, not what I have. I like what we have.
You're 23 years old. You're not tied down to the place where you live now. You like this girl, and she has to go to New York. I don't see any reason why, if she wants you to come with her, you wouldn't follow her to New York. Could be a wonderful experience for both of you. But if the only reason you're following her to New York is to prevent her from going with other guys, if the reason you want to follow her to New York is to take possession of her, to pee on her like she's a lamppost and warn off all the other dogs, that's a terrible reason to go to New York. If you can do the long distance thing and continue to see each other casually and then determine in 3 months or 6 months that you still like each other and still want to be together, that might be a good time to move to New York. But if you're rushing it, if you're moving to New York sooner than you might like to, only to police her, only to prevent other guys from looking at her, potentially dating her, those are the wrong reasons to go to New York. Ask her what she wants. Does she want you there? Would that be helpful? Would she like to go back to the Big Apple with a boyfriend? And would you like that boyfriend to be you? Then perhaps you should go. But if it's only possessiveness and control that are driving you to make this choice, those are terrible reasons. So sit with it for a minute. Ask yourself why you really want to go. Why you really want to go. Police take possession. Your girl, bad reasons. You want to be with her and she wants to be with you, great reasons. So if it's the latter, after you have an honest conversation, first with yourself and then with her, if it is the latter, then go. If it is the former, then stay. Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. Simply create your Stamps.com account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Then you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs, and they'll even send you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com makes it easy. Click, print, mail, and you are done. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bi guy living on the East Coast. I have a question about hygiene. My boyfriend doesn't like to brush his teeth, and I can't get him to do that. I've gotten to the point where I've made sure to remind him, and I physically throw the toothbrush at him in order for him to remember, because sometimes he wakes up and just walks away, and I don't know where he goes, I guess to make breakfast. And he just forgets about it until like 10 a.m. or something like that. And it kind of grosses me out. I don't know what to do.
I was inclined to take your side when you said your boyfriend doesn't brush his teeth and has to be reminded and badgered to brush his teeth, that he neglects his personal hygiene. Usually when someone says, my boyfriend doesn't shower or my girlfriend doesn't brush her teeth, they mean ever, won't shower, stinks, doesn't brush her teeth, they're green, they're rotting, they're falling out, terrible bad breath, what do I do? That isn't the case here. This is about the timing of when your boyfriend brushes his teeth in the morning. Sounds like you're a brush your teeth when you get out of bed before breakfast guy, and your boyfriend is go have breakfast and then brush your teeth guy. And there you are, throwing his toothbrush at him in the morning. That's kind of aggro and uncalled for, if indeed he remembers every morning after breakfast to go brush his teeth. That's a toothbrushing preference. That's not neglecting your personal hygiene. That's a, I don't want to go to work with bits of granola stuck to my teeth. I would rather go have my breakfast than brush my teeth. So you need to back the fuck off. If you don't want to kiss him in the morning because he's got morning breath and then he's got morning breath plus breakfast breath, that is absolutely your right. You can say to him, I brush my teeth before I come down in the morning so I have fresh breath. And you like to brush your teeth after breakfast, totally get it. But that means no morning canoodling until after breakfast and after toothbrushing. That's the reasonable boyfriend thing to do. Chucking his toothbrush at him from across the room is not the reasonable boyfriend thing to do. This isn't his personal hygiene problem. This is your problem. You guys have heard me talk about Movement. You know those two college dropouts that started their own watch company? This company has grown like crazy, and now with almost 2 million watches sold in 160-plus countries, they continue to revolutionize fashion on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. They have doubled their number of watch styles, and they're still expanding. Movement has come far from being a couple of crowdfunded kids working out of a living room. In the past year, they've not only introduced a ton of new watch collections for both men and women, but also expanded to sunglasses and fashion-forward bracelets for women. Movement watches are all about looking good and keeping it simple. Movement watches don't tell you how many steps you've taken or blow your wrist up with text messages. It tells time, and it looks good doing it. Movement watches start at just $95. At a department store, you're looking at $400 to $500 for a comparable watch. Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price for you. With Movement watches, you'll get classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. You'll also get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns if you go to mvmt.com/savage. See why Movement keeps growing? Check out their expanding collection. Again, go to mvmt.com/savage and join the movement.
Hey, Dan. I'm a college student and I've historically dated older men. My university has been working on a policy to strictly prohibit undergrad-faculty relationships, which I have a lot of problems with. However, many of my activists and feminist friends and communities on campus are in support of this policy. I completely get the power issue and would approve of the ban for relationships where there is a direct teaching relationship, but the all-out ban just seems a little shaming. I'm pretty alone in this view among communities I respect on campus who believe this policy would help more people than it hurts. So I'm wondering if you could provide some perspective. Are my personal habits and preferences getting in the way of a rational view of this ban?
When I was in college, one of my theater professors was married to a woman who had been a student, and she was about 25 years-ish younger than he was, and nobody was particularly scandalized. Also, when I was in college, there was a lot of sexual harassment, sexual assault, rape that went unpunished, even unstigmatized, because it was a different time. And a lot of colleges and a lot of people have come to the conclusion that allowing for the occasional consensual relationship where there is a large power differential opens the door to the abuse of power by others, where the relationship won't be consensual. It'll be exploitative. And so better to ban all of it, the consensual and the non-consensual, the power differential without an abuse of that power, and the power differential with the potential or the actual abuse of that power to protect everyone. I think consenting adults should be able to do whatever consenting adults wish to do. I think people have a right to make their own choices. I think young adults have agency and can make free choices and then should take responsibility for the choices that they make. And I don't think people who are a decade or two older or 5 years older, sometimes you're talking about a relationship where the prof or the TA is 3 or 4 years older than the student. I don't think that those are all abusive or exploitative. But I'm not running America's colleges and universities or prosecuting profs on Title IX charges myself. Paradoxically, making these relationships forbidden and taboo in some instances is going to make them more arousing. The Romeo and Juliet effect, if Romeo was a prof and Juliet was a grad student. That's going to happen. Also, there are a lot of young people who are attracted to older people. I would point out, though, that wherever you are, the college you're going to hasn't cornered the market on older dudes. There are older dudes in the community, in the town, in the neighboring town, who are working at or teaching at a neighboring institution of higher learning. If you're in Chicago and you're going to DePaul University, you're attracted to older guys, you don't just have your profs and TAs to choose from in the older guy department. You can fuck the profs and TAs at Loyola University or Columbia College or the University of Chicago or guys who aren't profs and TAs. You can fuck them too. I do think that in your conversations with your peers that you should stick up for agency and consent and responsibility while acknowledging that there may be a rational argument for banning these kinds of relationships because, again, while allowing for relationships where there was a power differential, where one person may have been a prof or even the teacher of somebody they became involved with romantically and sexually, allowing that not all of those relationships are abusive or exploitative, a lot of them are or can be and are experienced that way by the people who are in them, particularly if the older, more powerful person has a habit of acquiring and discarding young acolytes and exploiting them sexually. In the moment, the person that is basking their attention may not feel abused or exploited, but once they've been discarded, they may view the relationship very differently. You've got a prof who every year has a brand new undergrad girlfriend. That can be a problem. And there's a rational argument for banning those kinds of relationships. And there's the unintended consequence when you ban those kinds of relationships of making them more exciting, more arousing, forbidden undergrad fruit, as it were. Finding a great deal is such a thrill, but digging through the clothing racks at your local discount store is exhausting. ThredUp makes it easy to find the brands you love at unbeatable prices. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store with over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off retail price. Think Free People dresses for $10, J. Crew jeans for $12, and Kate Spade handbags for $30. Forget sifting through racks. ThredUp makes it super easy to shop by personalizing your experience. Use the filters to save your sizes, favorite brands, and price range to find exactly what you're looking for and find it fast. Every item on the site goes through a 12-point quality inspection process, ensuring the items are in like-new condition. Many are even brand new with tags. Better yet, ThredUp offers free shipping on qualified orders and super easy returns. Show your wallet who's boss and don't wait another minute. Right now, ThredUp is offering Savage Lovecast listeners an extra 30% off your first order. Go to ThredUp.com/savage. That's ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old gay male on the West Coast, and I'm calling for some family advice for me and my 28-year-old gay brother. First, some backstory. My brother and I came out almost a decade ago to our Southern Christian parents, and they don't support us. They still insist that it's a choice and that they won't meet our partners. So when I got married to my boyfriend of 5 years last fall, and they said no to the wedding invite, I decided to adopt your philosophy of my only leverage over them is my presence. But here's the kicker. We have a baby sister who's almost 20 and still lives at home. We came out to her before our parents, and she's always said she supports us and asks questions about our lives and our partners, but she's always straddled the fence of full acceptance when it came to our parents. I thought we'd pride her mind from their beliefs, but she broke my heart when she told me she wouldn't fly west for my wedding, despite my parents saying it was completely her choice. She said she didn't believe we should be married. We haven't talked much since then, and we used to talk all the time. So my sister is getting married this October to her boyfriend of a year and a half before she can even legally drink, and I'm already having anxiety about my invite. I'm pretty sure my brother and I will just get invites for one. My gut says we should RSVP as no if our partners aren't invited, but first, should we discuss with her what our invite for one means to us, or should we attend alone instead of adding more insult to injury with another family member, especially since she's still under our parents' influence? Our partners say we should go alone. My brother and I will, of course, always have each other, but he's not as committed as me to exiting their lives because of our treatment. But I still feel like our responses should be the same. What do you think? I could really use your help here, Dan.
It might be nice if you and your brother could present a unified front. If you and your brother could go to your sister and your parents and say, here's the deal. We're not coming unless our partners are invited too. But you can't force your brother to take your tack. So that may not be on the table. You have to decide what you're comfortable doing, what you want to do, and not impose on your brother, demand that your brother do the same. But you should certainly have a conversation with your brother about how to respond to this insult that you anticipate coming. Now, do your homework first. Before you get all head up about the insult, wait for the insult or call your sister and ask her if you are indeed going to receive the insult of an invite for one to her wedding, preventing you from bringing your spouse. If the answer is yes, that you're invited and your filthy homosexual spouse is not invited, in your shoes, I would not go to that fucking wedding. Your brother might make a different choice, but you get to make your own choice, and I would not go. Your parents didn't come to your wedding. Your sister didn't come to your wedding. What is it saying when you show up for theirs? Now, it might be a good idea to show up for theirs just to represent, to be the bigger person, to show them the kind of love and consideration and compassion that they refuse to show you, to be the better Christian than your parents or your sister could manage being themselves. But, and here's where I fall out on that. Your husband is your family now. You two are one flesh. And your family would like to, at least for that weekend, at least for that event, tear you two apart. That invite isn't just a fuck you, you're gay. That invite is also, in their minds, potentially a bomb they're lobbing into your relationship, a conflict that they are creating in your relationship. They're asking you to choose between them, between your family of origin, your biological family, and the family that you created with the man that you married, the person that you've chosen to spend the rest of your life with. They are trying to tear that up. They are trying to, at least for that weekend, sow discord and conflict in your marriage and your relationship. They don't know how chill your partner's being about this. They can't anticipate that. And I don't think, even if my partner was chill about it, that I would put up with that for 1 second. And I don't think you should put up with that for 1 second. They don't get to have a relationship with half of you. You and your partner are a couple. They don't get to rip you apart for a weekend and have you on their terms and demand that you show up when they couldn't show up for you. Fuck them. Fuck your sister and fuck your parents. That's what my RSVP would say. Fuck you, party of none, will be attending. The division and discord in your family, in your immediate family, was created by your parents and created by your sister. It is not your job or your responsibility to be on your best behavior for the rest of your life. You can be the bigger person still and not go. You are being the bigger person, in fact, for your husband. You are showing him that he is who you've chosen. He is your family. And he is your future. And your sister and your shitty, hateful parents, they're your past.
Hey, Dan, and at risk, me and my wife, she's sitting right next to me. I had to go to another state, another city in that state, for work. And for reasons that I'd rather not talk about, I wasn't really able to go hang out and enjoy that city. I just had to work and then go sit in my hotel room. My wife told me that I should go ahead and get an escort. Now that I did get an escort, she's telling me that I shouldn't have. Here's her side.
That is exactly what I said. And I am now learning what the cost was. And I apparently was completely uninformed of what the cost of an escort might be. And I am a little taken aback at what it costs for him to make a sensible decision to stay in his hotel room versus going out and possibly having terrible repercussions. And I'm being a little salty about it. And I'm okay with the fact that he was with another person. That's not it. I'm surprised at the cost, and I am a little taken aback. So I'm having a difficulty with it.
So, Dan, should I have called her once I found out that the cost was going to be $400 for an hour? Even though she had told me, go do that, and in the text said, in all exclamation points, seriously, exclamation point. Was I in the wrong?
You, sir, were in the wrong only if you knew it would cost $400 and you knew your wife would object to spending $400 of your money, the both of yours, and you withheld that information from her lest she not give you permission to do it. If you knowingly, consciously withheld that information, then you obtained your wife's permission under semi-false pretenses, and that's not okay. If you didn't think that she would object, if you assumed your wife knew that an escort in the big city was going to cost you $250, $300, $400 for an hour, and this was a misunderstanding, then you did nothing wrong. You asked your wife if you could hire an escort. She said, yes, seriously, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. You did it. Then it came out how much it costs, and she objects retroactively. And now she objects to you having done it in the first place because you should have known that she would object. And again, this goes to your motive and your behavior and what you did. Did you know that $400 was so much money that your wife would never have given you permission to do this and you actively withheld that information from her? Or were you unaware that she would object to that expense? If it was an innocent misunderstanding, wife, then you must let this go. And husband, you have to now file this away for the future that you may not spend that much money on an escort when you're out of town and you want to get some strange with the wife's permission. You're going to have to find another way to do it that doesn't involve the outlay of so much of your shared, presuming that you two have merged your finances, your shared funds.
Hi. I guess I have a lot of questions, but the one that is most present in my mind is, do straight men watch transgender porn, or would that be an identification of someone who is gay or bisexual or interested or curious or has no idea? I recently discovered, and we've talked about it a little bit upon my discovery, that my apparently straight boyfriend has had some curiosities in the past, and it seems that maybe something that turns him on is transsexual women, or at least transgender women, rather, and transgender porn, at least. So I'm just looking for a little light on this.
Transgender porn featuring trans women, many of whom still have penises, that's for straight guys. Gay guys don't watch that. I mean, okay. I can categorically rule out that there's not a gay guy in the world who's attracted to trans women who have penises and watches some of the porn. But overwhelmingly, the demand for that kind of porn and those kinds of sex workers and those kinds of partners, romantic partners, is straight guys. There are women, women with dicks. And there are some straight guys out there who like dick. Does that make them bi?
Okay.
You know, does that make them bi? Not necessarily. You know, I always like to say that sexual identity is a three-layer cake. There's what you want to do. There's what you are doing. Then there's what you tell people at the top. And the more aligned your layers are, the less messy a cake you are. But there's always a little like rounding up or rounding down in the identity area. You know, if a guy is into women, and I assume your boyfriend's into you, does he eat your pussy?
Does
he love having sex with you? So he's not a closeted gay guy who's like closing his eyes tight and pretending you're, name a movie star, a male movie star, male performer. He's not closing his eyes and pretending you're Justin Bieber or something. He's into you and he's into women. But, you know, like a lot of straight guys who are just a little bit bi, a little touch of the bi, he's into dick.
Yeah.
There's a reason why so much porn made for straight male consumers is so focused on dick.
Right.
Because a lot of guys like to look at dick. They like to compare dicks. They like to see a hard dick blow a load. Like the camera in a lot of straight porn is focused primarily on the cock. And if guys, all straight guys, were repulsed by dick, that would not be the case.
Right.
Can I just say hello really quick?
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, Ryan.
I'm the driver. Hey, so funny enough, I have a 2-year-old child with a now transgender guy. At the time, I mean, we met in college, he was very heterosexual and very into me and eating my pussy and having sex all the time, obviously, and we made a human. He's now, like, totally not into girls.
She's a trans woman now.
Well, I don't know if I'm using the term properly, but he does drag shows and stuff.
Okay, so he might just be into drag.
But in his day-to-day life, there will be days where he dresses up as a girl, but he also has days where he doesn't.
Okay, so he's genderqueer or he's bi-gender. What does he how does he identify or she identify, your former partner?
I'm pretty sure he's... I honestly don't know. I can't say 100%. We don't talk anymore, but that's what he's doing publicly. I think he's actually trying to build up a following more so as on his social medias as being a drag queen.
All right. Well, maybe he was bi or gay and closeted or trans. Sounds like he's somewhere in the midst of sorting it all out and also performing it at the same time. And I feel bad for the kid you guys made together, that this person, your ex, isn't in your life at all and presumably isn't in your kid's life either. That's sad.
Yeah, that's like, I think, another, I mean, maybe some of his sexual like confusion there is, you know, feeding into that. But I think that there's like a lot of other layers to issues that like have stirred up his life into a bit of chaos. But I mean, for me, selfishly, it's kind of better because I get to live my own life and I get to raise our daughter, like my daughter, mm-hmm. how I want. And I have, you know, more or less like full control. I would prefer it like this way rather than him being like in and out and sorting out his stuff with her in this middle of it. Yeah.
Right. The consistency of his absence as opposed to him blowing in and out and upsetting the apple cart.
Exactly. But the funny thing is now, you know, and my best friend has always been there for me through it all, but it was just funny when everything happened with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A little bit.
So you're, what you're saying, I mean, the reason you're offering your experience here is that it conflicts with the advice. I'm trying to reassure your friend that his interest in transgender porn or attraction to trans women doesn't mean that your friend's boyfriend, isn't straight, that he can be straight and into trans women. Indeed, guys into trans women are straight guys. Gay guys aren't into trans women.
Yeah.
Regardless of how their dicks are. But your experience is that your ex was also, you know, showing some of the same things, was into your pussy, into sex with you, but then came out as something very different. But or gender-wise, you know, an unexpected transition or unexpected development or a new, like, facet of his life or her life. God, this is hard to talk about with the pronouns flying around. And so maybe that means that, you know, your friend isn't as secure in this relationship as I might be leading her to believe she could be. Is that why you offer your experience?
Well, I mean, you know what? Like, when you say it, I guess, yeah, there is a part of me that's like, but at the same time, I think that just experiencing what her and I have and reaching out and talking to people that we have, I mean, I'm just now more so of the belief that sexuality is just so incredibly fluid. Mm-hmm. And that there is no one like hard and fast answer to those things. But I guess when you say it, there's a part of me, when I look at their situation, I'm like, well, yeah, I guess that they could have a successful monogamous heterosexual relationship. However, at the same time, there is that part of him that I think he might want to explore a little bit more because he's done so in secrecy. Mm-hmm. And he might have like an earning to explore it a little bit more, maybe not in secrecy so much, or just explore.
Well, that would be a question for your friend. Well, first of all, I want to say that I don't think with men that sexuality is as fluid as it is with women. I think there's often a difference there. A lot of young men are still figuring out who they are and then figuring out whether they're going to tell the truth about who they are. And that can be perceived as fluidity, but usually it's pretty set after they start telling the truth about who they are and come out as who they actually are. And that's not fluidity. That's coming the fuck out of the closet. I said that I was straight for a long time. Then I said I was bi. Then I said I was gay. That wasn't fluid for me. That was tiptoeing up to telling the truth and the only truth about myself. Now, the question for your friend.
You were never into trans porn.
I was never into trans porn. I was never into girls. I had sex with girls. I wasn't into girls at all. The question for your friend is, you know, can she let her boyfriend be who he is, which is a straight guy who's into her, but also a straight guy who's attracted to trans women? And is that, if they're going to have a monogamous relationship, something she's comfortable letting him think about occasionally and explore with pornography and fantasy? If he wants to have that experience, can they have the kind of monogamous relationship or the hall pass that he might need to experience what that's like, to suck a dick, to suck a woman's dick at some point in his life as an expression of his particular and unique brand of male heterosexuality? Or is that a deal breaker for the original caller? And if it's a deal breaker for the original caller, then maybe this isn't the right relationship for you. Because I think that people really have this desperate need to be everything they are sexually. And people will agree to monogamy or agree to setting some part of themselves aside to keep someone in their life And the longer that goes on, the harder it is to sustain and maintain that, to go without. And not everybody gets everything they want. We all have to pay the price of admission, and or many prices of admission. Maybe that's a price of admission he can pay and will pay and will pay without error to be with you, original caller. Or maybe he'll slip up. But this is a conversation you need to have with him about what's permissible, what's allowed. But if you know this about him to be – you know this about his sexuality, then you can't be in denial about it, and he shouldn't be in denial about it either, and he shouldn't have to be in denial about it to be with you.
I agree. This is the original caller, by the way. One of the things that, you know, has been so confusing for me in this whole situation is I was like, I'm not mad about what you like, just about the lying part, you know? And I tried – as this thing – as all of this came out into discovery, I literally stopped our argument and said, listen, I'm going to be a person for you right now. Like, if you're into this, if you think whatever, like, that's not shameful, you know? So I've been trying to be open – with him, because I also don't think he's ever had anyone else in his life
talk to about this.
Who will sit down and, yeah, and, like, sift through it with him and not be judgmental and, like, remove myself from the girlfriend role for a little bit to just kind of talk to him like
that's
a human
great.
Being.
It's great,
and,
that,
like,
it's great that you're willing to do that for him, and he's probably needed a person like that in his life for a long time. I would encourage you to let go of the anger. Like, you can understand why he would lie about this or hide it. And not share it with a romantic partner.
Yeah.
He's in a position where he's never been able to share it with anyone. You know, he didn't create the cultural shame and stigma around his desires that led him to lie to the people in his life about them. I lied to people in my life about who I was. Think of the girls I slept with back when I was pretending I was straight or bi. I lied to them under duress. I felt I had no choice but to try to learn how to be straight, even though every cell in my body was screaming, dick, right? I had to learn. And I lied to him under duress, and I feel bad about it to this day, but I would hope that they would understand that I didn't make a free choice just to be an asshole and deceive people. I made a shitty choice under duress, and I think he did the same when he lied to you about this stuff, that the culture told him that you can't be who you are and have the things in life that you want if you tell the truth about these things to your partners or anyone else.
Right. And I guess my biggest thing that I was trying to navigate was, okay, is it just this maybe fetish or things that he's into that he's ashamed to share with me? Or is he trying to hide the fact that he is a different, not a straight man, but I'm like this perfect kind of buffer into the land of people thinking that he's straight.
Right. Are you a beard? Are you a mask? And is he gay? I mean, that's the concern here. Like, oh, he's looking at dick. Is he gay and he's faking it with me, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, that's definitely a question that
I have. It doesn't sound from the intensity and passion of the sex life you describe having with him like he's a gay guy. I was a gay guy having sex with girls, and it was not good sex for them. It was terrible sex for them and for me too, but it wasn't good. I didn't enjoy being with them. I didn't enjoy being in them, on them, near them. You know, it was like when you try to shove two magnets together and they're flipped around the wrong way. That's what that sex was like. And I don't think that's what the sex that you've had with him is like. So there's a little bit, it sounds like he's mostly straight, predominantly straight. And there's a little bit of his sexuality that's like kind of into dick too. And along comes women with dick.
Right. Which is actually quite fascinating because I'm not going to lie. I definitely did a little research after the discovery because I was like, this is nothing I've ever looked at before. And it's kind of like some alien shit. Like, it's kind of fascinating, you know? Like, I kind of get it. I don't know. It's not for me, but...
No, there's a lot of trans women with dicks out there who are really fucking hot. And there's a lot of porn out there featuring trans women with dicks. It's really fucking hot. And that porn, again, going back to your original question, and I'm going to have to jump off the phone now, that porn is made for not gay guys. It's made for straight guys.
Straight men.
Good luck to you both.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Dan. I'm a straight guy living in a West Coast Canadian city. I love my progressive community, and I usually celebrate transgressions against uptight sexual taboos. But something happened recently that made me take a step back and question myself. The specific question was, am I a homophobe? So here's the situation. I go to a gym that's right on the border of my city's vibrant gay village. It's a popular place for both gay and straight people. I'd probably guess that the male patrons are 50-50 gay and straight. The men's change room has a hot tub and a sauna in it where guys are increasingly hooking up. recently I was in the hot tub and one guy was getting a hand job while another was getting familiar with the jets. And the third was trying really hard to pick up the guy beside him. There were several visible erections in the tub. So when I was a teenager, I worked as a lifeguard. I know people like to try to get away with hooking up in public pools, but this is a weird liminal space between public and private. While it's not fully public, you're naked, hanging out with strangers. So certain norms apply, I think. Because it made me uncomfortable, I thought about maybe complaining to management about people fucking in a tub, or as it were, fucking the tub itself. But I'm not the complaining type. I don't even really like to send wine back at a restaurant when I think it's corked. I'm calling because I want to know your take. Would it have been homophobic if I had complained to the manager?
I know gay people who've complained to management at gyms about exactly what you describe. Was it homophobic of them? Not necessarily. People don't want to watch other people fuck, or not all people want to watch other people fuck. And there are gay dudes out there who want to be able to get into a hot tub or walk into a sauna in a 50-50 gay straight gym without it being assumed that they're there for sex and without it being assumed that they are necessarily down for the sex or approve of the sex. It's not a sex space. And in a way, that's part of what makes it exciting to get an erection in a sauna or have an assignation in a hot tub at a pool, is you are breaking the rules and violating the rules. You are transgressing. And that, for humans, tends to be arousing. So you getting management to crack down a little bit on the sexual activity in the tubs or in the sauna, in a way, it reinforces the social norms that are being violated by these transgressions in the first place, and therefore preserves the hotness of what's going on in the hot tub in the sauna by making it just that much more naughty again. Make sauna sex naughty again. You have that power. I don't think it would have been homophobic of you to go and complain, to say something to management about it getting a little out of hand and you feeling as a straight guy, or if you were a gay guy, you feeling as a gay guy that you can't use the sauna or the hot tub anymore. Because it's a boiling soup of fucking guys now. It would be homophobic of you to throw a fit, to physically assault someone, to punch someone, to jump out of the hot tub and scream faggot, faggot, faggot at the guys who were messing around. That would be homophobic. Asking the gym to enforce the rules that probably already exist about there not being sexual activity or sexual activity not being permitted in the locker rooms and the saunas and the hot tubs, not necessarily homophobic. Certainly somebody who was a homophobe could be motivated to complain, but you are not a homophobe, so your complaint isn't motivated by homophobia. And I bet there are some gay guys at your gym who don't use the sonics. They don't want people to think that they're there for sex. And if you can, the assistance of management, stamp out the sex, you're going to actually make it possible for those gay guys to use the sauna again. And you're going to make it hot for the gay guys who, despite the crackdown, continue to get away with it.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to the woman in episode 591 who talked about her boyfriend's relationship with his boss. And I usually really agree with your advice, Dan, but I thought that you were a little lax on this one. I think that I totally get that work spouses are a thing, but I think that this one is particularly weird because she's his boss and there's a power dynamic at play. And it actually made me wonder how normalized this is to her boyfriend. I think she really needs to have a serious conversation with him about boundary setting, because it sounds like this isn't your ordinary, you know, sort of jealous buddy coworker. This is his boss, and there should be some professional boundaries in place. If it were my situation, I would be, and I was feeling routinely sort of denigrated by my partner's boss, I would have a real conversation with them about, you know, possibly even talking to HR. I don't mean to be alarmist, but I thought that the situation was a little weirder than you made it out to be.
Hi, this is a response to the caller who just wasn't sure what to do with that garter belt her boyfriend's into. I had the same problem, because why in God's name would I wear this thing, except that he likes it. So what I did is I got one, and we took a trip, like maybe a 3-4 hour road trip. We were in the car for a little while. I drove, and I'm wearing this thing, but I'm also wearing over that kind of like a dress. I think I was wearing a dress. And the point was that throughout the car ride for those 3 or 4 hours that he couldn't do anything to me because I was driving, he's just kind of got a stare at it, and he knows it's there because it's kind of peeking out from under the hem of my skirt. And so he's thinking about it. It's getting him going. That gets me going. So when we finally arrived to our destination, everybody got going. So take a road trip.
Hi, this is a comment regarding the woman that called in about her 10-year-old son searching YouPorn on his phone. What the fuck? He's 10. It's, I've noticed a bunch of times people will call in and they're so scared of being sex negative parents that they aren't using their brains. Like, you can't, a 10-year-old looking at YouPorn is not okay. Don't worry about sex shaming him. Protect him. Like, there's a point where you still need to be protecting your child from media, not protecting him from the possibility of making him feel bad for looking at YouPorn. Like, he should feel a little bad for looking at YouPorn. That is not acceptable. He's 10.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, 206-302-2064. Get yourself some Savage Lovecast merch. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on shop. You can buy a t-shirt or a mug there. You're the biggest Savage Lovecast fan in your life. Maybe that's you. Maybe that's someone you love. But you can get them a t-shirt and a mug and more at savagelovecast.com. Click shop. And if you like my political rantings at the top of the show, you will love me on Blabbermouth and Eli Sanders and Rich Smith. The three of us get together each week to talk about the news. And there's always so much to talk about and rant and rave and yell at each other and pound the table. It's a good time. Get Blabbermouth wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Robbie Suave on Twitter at Robbie Suave. Suave is spelled S-O-A-V-E. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week with an installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for doing it.